Then if you would, open your Bibles to 1 Corinthians chapter 9. We're going to begin there in just a moment. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. About 8 months ago, my wife decided that she wanted to do something that required her to decide to do it several months, in fact, before the actual event. She decided that she wanted to run a triathlon. I don't know why anybody would want to do that, but that's what she wanted to do. And there was swimming involved, lots of swimming. I was tired watching it. And then from there, she ran out into the cold. It was April. You think, okay, April, spring. No, it was 40 degrees that day. So she goes from pool to outside, 40 degrees, and she grabs a bike and she runs first. She runs, and then bikes, and it was just wow. It was lots of moving around. It's exhausting for me to watch that. But many of you participate in sports like this. I know some of you recently did. Sort of a different kind of race where there are obstacles involved and that sort of thing, and I've participated against my will in those sorts of things, and you know, it's fun, and you look back on it and you say, yeah, we did something, we accomplished it, whatever we did, we did the thing, and we scored points and we won, yay. Truth be told, I enjoy sports, I enjoy activities, and if you invite me to play volleyball or badminton or bowling or whatever, you know, I'm game. It's fun. But it turns out that Paul was counting on people liking those sorts of things as well, and at least having an appreciation for them. In my mind, I have a hard time seeing Paul running a foot race just for fun. But if Paul is anything like us, people might be surprised at some of the hobbies that we have. And so maybe Paul himself participated in these sorts of things. Maybe Paul ran the Grecian version of the triathlon. I don't know. But the truth is that in Corinth, they had what was called the Isthmian Games. And it was similar to the ancient Grecian Olympics that we have modeled our Olympics after. We've added a few things here and there, like curling in the winter sports. I don't think that was a thing back then. But the same kind of competitive, go for the gold, let's win this thing together, has always been part of man's drive, is to win and to desire to achieve greatness. In 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24, Paul says, "Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified." Now, this passage is, in fact, nestled in this section that has to do with eating meat sacrificed to idols. In chapters 8 through 10, Paul's writing about this question that they've had about what about meat sacrificed to idols. Some say, yes, we should eat it, and it's okay. Some say, no. And there's a big discussion about how to love one another, how to give proper respect for the one true God, and how to keep away from evil influences like demons and idolatry, how to make this distinction between living in the world but not being of the world and being unaffected by all these things. And smack dab in the middle of that is this almost seemingly out of place, I buffet my body, let's run the race and win it. And the idea really is that Paul talks about needing self-control. And that's going to influence not just ourselves, but the way that we have an impact on other people. And that really is the whole context of 1 Corinthians 8 through 10. And we're going to come back to that point later. But I want to do some bouncing from this idea and sort of not go out of context, but sort of lift this passage and go with the picture for tonight of running this race. We are running a race, and we are on this journey. Logan led us in the song that we're on a pilgrimage, and that's the truth, is we are on this path of life, and a lot depends on how we're going to go down this path. And Paul says, don't you know that this is going on. Don't you know that in a race all runners run? And he assumes that they would have some appreciation for the journey that we're on. And there are four points that I want to make, and it just so happens that there's sort of a mnemonic device here. They all begin with P. But in running this race, we'll be looking at our purpose, our preparation, the need for perseverance, and then this ultimate goal, the idea of having a prize when all is said and done. So we'll look at those four points, and then we'll conclude with a statement by Paul in the book of 2 Timothy. To begin with, why do we even want to run this race for starters? And again, when it comes to running a race, if you said, hey, let's go for a quick jog, I say, no thanks, I'm sitting on the couch right now. But Lindsay wanted to run a race, and some of you are really excited about doing that sort of thing. But why do we run this race? When it comes to running the race that is living for Christ, then what is the goal? Why would I serve the Lord? And there are some reasons why we should not run this race. There are some reasons, some bad reasons, to run the race for Christ. In Matthew chapter 23, Jesus talks about a few reasons that some people had for serving God. In Matthew 23, in verses 25 through 28, he's giving several woes to the Pharisees in this section. He says in verse 25, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you clean the outside of the cup and the plate, but inside they're full of greed and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and the plate, that the outside also may be clean. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly appear beautiful, but within are full of dead people's bones and all uncleanness. So you also outwardly appear righteous to others, but within you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." The reason that so many of the Pharisees and the scribes and the lawyers were so spiritually appearing, I won't say spiritually minded, but they were so focused seemingly on these good, godly, spiritual, law-abiding things was because they cared about what people saw. And that's not a good reason to run this race. If we're concerned about what people think, and so therefore I'm going to get off the couch and go for a run, that's the wrong reason. I'm going to serve the Lord because I think people would think I'm a bad Christian if I don't. That's the wrong reason. In Acts chapter 5, Ananias and Sapphira, you may be familiar with this story. In Acts chapter 5, Ananias and Sapphira have seen Barnabas at the end of Acts 4 giving some of his means to care for other Christians. So they want to do the same thing. They think carefully about their resources, and they give some. But then they hold back some of it, hoping that others won't notice, so that they'll appear a certain way to people. That's a very serious problem. And maybe in a surprising way, the Spirit of God disciplines them, corrects them, punishes them, and they lose their lives for it. To try to fit in with the other Christians that are doing such a complimentary job of serving the Lord. They want to fit in. They want to appear like they're doing really well. We're spiritually minded people, just like Barnabas, the son of encouragement. We're encouraging people too. That's the wrong reason to be running this race. You think later about Acts chapter 8, Simon the sorcerer. I believe that he truly had repented. He had turned from his ways, but he got distracted a little bit here. And he saw the power that Peter and John brought with them, and he wanted that power too. He thought that there was something to be gained by following the Lord. Maybe even for just a little while, there was something to be gained. And turn with me to the book of 2 Timothy. There's a fellow named Demas that is mentioned one other time in the book of Colossians. In the book of Colossians, Demas is a good man. He's with Paul. But when we come to chapter 4, in verse 10, a little later down his race, down his run, Demas, it says in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 10, is in love with this present world and has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. He got distracted here. And he was thinking about the temporary gain, perhaps early on. Following the Lord, it's good for me now, but then later it wasn't worth it. And so he fell off. There are some temporary things that will benefit us in this run, but if we're not looking to the end goal, it's just not a good reason to be running. There's a purpose. Many things might attract us to spiritual living, to worship, to relationships with other good, godly people. The fact is that some of the very best friends you could possibly have in the world are in this room. These are nice people, and they're very enjoyable people. In fact, I like a lot of you. And I like to think that many of you, those same people, like me too. No, the truth is that the people that you can count on the most, of course, they believe in the Lord. They follow his word. They love their neighbors as themselves. And so, yes, that's a wonderful reason. But is that the purpose? Is that the reason we should have for running this race? Many reasons to want to study the Bible more that really have nothing to do with God, have everything to do with being able to prove that I'm right and I know more than my neighbors do about God. Maybe even worship itself is attractive because it feels good. There's sort of emotional appeal to it. I enjoy singing, but I am not so interested in praising God with my life. A number of things that may be superficial or temporary, but the fact is we need to know the purpose for running this race in the first place. Maybe you're like me and you're thinking, well, do I even have to run at all? can I just sit back on the couch? I want to suggest to you that this is a race that you're running whether you like it or not. I think Paul is making the point that as Christians, we know we're on this track. But the fact is that we all are on this journey in life, whether we like it or not. If you would look at 2 Corinthians in chapter 4, Paul makes the point here that things of this life are passing away. Everything is on its way to somewhere else. And so this is one of two reasons I want to suggest to you that we should be running. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 16 through 18, Paul says, "So we do not lose heart, though our outer self is wasting away. Our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. As we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, they're temporary, but the things that are unseen are eternal." We are in this world where things don't last. Just to give you an idea, you build a house and you live in it for a while, and maybe everything's fresh and new to begin with, and the first time somebody scoots a chair across the floor, it's not new anymore, is it? Somebody scuffs the walls, a child runs through the house and those fingers find the paint and things change. Or maybe you decide we're going to move out of the house, move somewhere else. The next people that move in, they're going to change the cabinets around, they're going to repaint it, and maybe over time it is dilapidated beyond repair and somebody tears down that house that you built. How many houses have been built and torn down throughout history? Stuff happens. Seeds that get planted grow up into trees that bear fruit, and other seeds are passed along, and those seeds become trees and bear fruit and get passed along. The original tree is long gone. Things change. Things happen. Babies are born. They grow up. They have babies of their own. And those babies grow up and have babies of their own, can't remember their grandparents' names. Things change and develop and move on, and things are transient. And so we are on this journey. Everything is on its way to somewhere else. And the question is, are we going to race, or are we just going to let life pass by, and all of a sudden it's over? And so we need to run in such a way that we may win. Your race may be short or long, but you are on this journey. You are on this pilgrimage that we sang about, and only you can run it in such a way to win. And that is the second reason I want to point out that we need to be running. What's the purpose? The purpose is to win. Why do people do these sorts of races? For exercise? Maybe so. Maybe that's some of the reasons people engage in these sorts of races, is a physical test of fitness here. But that's not really racing, is it? That's just exercising and the enjoyment that comes from that. But racing, okay. Is it the scenery? Not if you're in last place. That's not good scenery. Is it the experience? That's what people say when they don't win. It was a nice experience. What's the reason people spend so much money on those cars in NASCAR or in here, Indy 500? Why is it that people go to such extremes and do all the scientific testing with aerodynamics and try to get the best fuel ratio so that they can win? That's why you race. You race so that you can win. So what does winning look like for a Christian? Well, in Philippians chapter 3, Paul talks about some of the cost that's involved in this race, but he uses a different kind of analogy here. He's talking about pressing on. Maybe race is the idea, but this is a hardship. This is a burden to be bearing. And in my mind, this is a furrow, and he is plowing through, and he's pressing on to get to the very end. And in verse 8, he says, "I indeed count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord." For Paul, that was winning, is knowing Christ in every conceivable way. including the resurrection. He goes on to say, "For his sake I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish in order that I may gain Christ and be found in him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which comes through faith in Christ, the righteousness from God that depends on faith, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection and may share his sufferings, becoming like him in his death, that by any means possible I may attain the resurrection from the dead." I'm going to the goal. And I'm pressing on, he says, in verse 12. I press on to make it my own. For Paul, winning this purpose was to become like Christ in every way, including the glory of the resurrection. And so there's a purpose that we have in running this race. One, we are on this journey, whether we like it or not. I don't know that God has ever accepted any resignations from life. We're living, and we need to live well. Second, let's talk a little bit about preparation. As we think about how to prepare our spiritual fitness for this race at hand. Back in 2007, I had the idea I'm going to go and be a camp counselor. It was only for 1 week, one wonderful, exhausting week. But I remember getting a packet in the mail, this notebook, and it said, here's some helpful reminders and some suggestions for going into camp as a counselor. And I'd been to camp a couple times as a kid, as a camper, but never as a counselor. I thought, this will be fun. I'll be in charge. it's exhausting. One of the things that they said, and it was an asterisk, if you are not currently in an exercise program, and then all caps, start now. And as a 20-year-old, I thought, yeah, right, this is for all those other people. By Tuesday, I was sucking wind. They found the only series of hills in Indiana, and that's where camp was set up. And I was so tired by the end of the week. There was one day during the week where we played Ultimate Frisbee, counselors versus campers. And I'll tell you, we won, but I was dying by the end of it. We look at this race and we think, I can handle this. I've got this. I mean, look what I've done so far. Look where I've been. No, you need to get ready for something else. Something else is coming in your spiritual life. In this race that we're on, there is more to come. Start now. Prepare. There are trials that you are going to face. There are spiritual dangers and temptations that God is holding at bay for the time, but they are coming. Opportunities to serve in the kingdom. We prayed about that tonight, that God would open doors, that he would give us opportunities to love some soul through us. Are we ready for that? Have we the skill sets to be able to love people as God would want to love people? And we need to be preparing for those right now if we're going to be ready. You're going to meet someone who's going to want to know the gospel. And are you ready to teach them? You're going to need to discipline your children one day, and you've not even graduated high school. How are you going to be able to do that if you can't practice self-control right now? Get ready right now. The church needs shepherds and servants, and where do these men and their helpmeet wives come from, if not starting right now in these very early ages? You watch the Boston Marathon sometime, or some of the other marathons. It was the first Monday after tax day. They called it Patriots Day in Boston. And our first year in Boston, I accidentally ended up on the corner where the finish line was right as they were finishing. It was so exciting. You won't see too many out-of-shape runners, too many overweight runners, athletes, trying to complete that race. They've done some preparation. They've gotten their bodies fit and ready to engage in that sport so that they're ready to run. So there's some conditioning that we need to do, some preparation along the way, things to keep us in shape. In Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1, such an obvious thing, but we get distracted and we think, this is not going to slow me down. But the writer of Hebrews says in Hebrews 12, 1, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. There are some things that are holding us back. And by the way, when we think about purpose, and we think about NASCAR or Indy 500, can you imagine one of the drivers racing around, and they get at some point, and they see somebody in the stands with a sign, and it says, go number, and it's them. And they pull over, and they stop to have a chat with that person. They know what they're racing for. They don't stop. That is not the purpose of their running, of their racing. And so we need to lay aside those weights, and pride is a big one, and all these other distractions and sin. Hebrews 12:1 should be so obvious, but we think, I can hold on to this and still run effectively. No, we can't. 1 Timothy 4, verse 7, simply says there at the end, train yourself for godliness. Godliness isn't something that some people have naturally and other people don't. It is something that only comes by discipline and training. We need to learn how to be God-respective people. Olympic athletes are willing to alter their diet, their sleep habits, their social calendars, all for the sake of competing in the games. It means sacrifice, because any compromise in the training regimen will mean defeat. It will mean sure defeat. And so we can't compromise. We need to train ourselves. And remember what Paul says here in 1 Corinthians 9, 26 through 27. He says, I do not run aimlessly. I know my goal. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body. I am in training, and I keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. Paul knows this is serious. And every day is not just some play activity. This is practice. This is real. And I need to get ready. And I need to count the cost. As we think about preparation, every day I need to be thinking about what Jesus says in Luke 14 to people that were thinking about following him. Have you counted the cost? Someone starts to build a tower, he says in Luke 14, and they didn't look ahead to see if they could finish it. An army comes up against another king, and he says, I'll go up against them, not thinking, can I actually defeat them in battle or not? And I don't think here Jesus is saying, some of you need to not follow me because you don't have what it takes. That's not what Jesus is saying. He's saying, yes, follow me, but you need to finish what you start. And so there's some perseverance here, which brings us to this next point. This is not a short race. We could make the cliche remark, it's a marathon, not a sprint, and that's certainly true. We'll use another illustration here. December 7th, 1941, is described as a day that will live in infamy. Early one Sunday morning, the Japanese Navy attacked Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. And that began the United States' entrance into the Second World War. When that war was completed in 1918, on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, they signed this treaty. And the idea was that they signed it on the 11th hour, the 11th day of the 11th month, so that it would be remembered. We're not going to do this war stuff anymore. But what's interesting to me about that is this was the Second World War. Do you know what they called the First World War? It was the war to end all wars. Do we really think that after one spiritual battle, I'm done? My legs are aching now spiritually. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I've got to keep up. I've got to keep going. If we're not careful, we'll be like Elijah the Tishbite coming down from Mount Carmel, racing ahead of the chariot that Ahab's in, going to Jezreel to celebrate the victory that God's had at Mount Carmel, not seeing the next spiritual battle that's coming when Jezebel threatens him. We've got to be ready for that, because temptation is coming. Difficulties are coming. The war is not over. The fighting is not done. The race is still going on. And there's no time to rest on our laurels. Again, back in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and in verse 25, Paul talks about the focus that we have, the self-control we need to have, he says, in all things. These earthly athletes, they do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable wreath. Two things about this. One, we need to exercise self-control. The old saying, no pain, no gain. I'm not so sure about that. I think if it hurts too bad, we're probably doing it wrong in the gym, so be careful about that. But the truth is that we can't expect life in Christ to be easy. There are going to be sacrifices we're going to make. Sacrifices to read my Bible when I'd maybe rather be watching the Colts game, when I'd maybe rather sleep. I need to read my Bible. I need to pray like I've not prayed before or not prayed in a long time. To serve others and make those sacrifices. To encourage others. to pray more than I have before, or maybe not in a long time, to evangelize, to grow in patience and humility, to pray more than I have before, maybe not in a long time. It's hard work to do these sorts of things. To grow in honesty is going to mean sacrifice and real effort. Training regimen physically is full of intentionally difficult things. And so that means spiritually, I'm going to be pushing myself out of my comfort zone continually so that I can be growing in my perseverance. Now, why would I do that? Why would I stretch myself beyond my comfort zone so as to press for the prize? Because number two, this prize is worth having. And this is the second point from 1 Corinthians 9:25. These athletes in the Isthmian Games, he talks about a perishable wreath. I have some trophies back at the farm in Alabama. One of them that I'm probably most proud of that I've not thought about in a long time is about this tall. And it was at a marching band contest, and I won. Well, it doesn't matter what I won, but I won a trophy. It's plastic. I mean, it looks gold, but you drop one of them the wrong way, and it's just going to snap. These perishable wreaths that they won at the Isthmian Games, it is what it sounds like. It is the Little Caesar's green leaves going around their ears. Oh, but they were so proud to wear it. And they celebrated, and they sang, and they chanted, and they had their favorite athletes, and what a wonderful moment, and how short-lived it was. But what do we win? Not a pile of wilted lettuce. No, we get something more than that. We get an imperishable wreath. So keep your focus. In James chapter 1 and verse 12, James says, "Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial." He remains steadfast. He holds on, even when it gets difficult. "For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life which God has promised to those who love him." That in this race that we're running, we are proving with every breath, with every step, with every heartbeat, that we love the Lord more than life itself. Runners know that it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Many of us may begin with good intentions. Many of us have begun with good intentions. But then we wander, or we get distracted, or we get tired, or we quit altogether. The muscles ache, the chest and throat burn, the feet get blisters and skin splits. But you keep on because the prize is worth it. Spiritually speaking, the prize is certainly worth it. The passage we read earlier, 2 Corinthians 4, an eternal weight of glory. And then that's where we finish with this idea of the prize. It resembles the purpose in a way. The purpose is this heart's desire, this hope that we have going forward, but the prize is the actuality of it. It is what really comes. And it's when the pilgrimage is over. In Hebrews chapter 11, in verses 13 through 16, we read about some of these clouds of witnesses that were gathered around others who are striving in faith to serve the Lord. In Hebrews 11, verse 13, it talks about how all these, looking at Abraham and Sarah, they died in faith, the writer says. "Not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city." Abraham and Sarah and Isaac and Jacob and our forefathers, they looked ahead in faith because they saw that this home that God was preparing for them was worth having. They could turn their back on everything else because they were focused on the prize. A place of welcome from the Father and the Son, what Revelation refers to as the Spirit and the Bride as well. In Revelation 22, and verse 17, the Spirit and the Bride say, "Come," and let the one who hears say, "Come," and let the one who is thirsty come, let the one who desires to take the water of life without price. You look at verse 12, Jesus says, "Behold, I am coming soon, bringing my recompense with me to repay each one for what he has done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end." He has promised this welcome. And that is the prize for which we run. That when we get to that finish line and it's over, then we've arrived. And that's why we run. And so Paul is able to say toward the end of his life in 2 Timothy 4 and verses 6 through 8, continuing this idea of running the race, writing to his young son in the faith, "I'm already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have loved his appearing." And we love his appearing. We love that Jesus came, because as Hebrews says in Hebrews 12, he is the author and finisher of our salvation. He finished. He ran this race. The same path that you're on, the same steps that you're taking, he's been there. He blazed the trail, and he finished. And so Paul knows without a doubt going forward that this is what is laid up for me. This is what is laid up for you and for everyone else who's on this path if they run like he ran. And so my question is for you, are you running like you ought to? I hope that we see that there are things that we can adjust, things that we can improve on, things that we can grow in. The point being made in 1 Corinthians 8 through 10, again, though, is not just for my sake, that I'm running by myself, but I need to exercise this self-control for the sake of others, too. And there are others that I can have impact on. Others that Paul writes about, 1 Corinthians 8 through 10, are also serving Christ. I'd be mindful of one another. That maybe I'm tired, but somebody else is looking at me saying, if he can keep going, I can keep going. If she's running as hard as she can, I can too. And that's why we gather together tonight, times like these, to encourage each other. But if you're not already running, please do recognize you are on this journey, and everything is on its way to somewhere else. My question is, where are you headed? Where are you going? What does your finish line look like? If you were to picture the finish in your mind as you continue down this road that you've chosen, where does it end? Does it end in this home, in this welcome, the crown of righteousness? Can you say that you've loved the appearing of the Lord because you are now following him with all your heart, that you've been buried with him, that your life is now hid with Christ? If you can't say that, then your end does not look like what we've described so far. You need to make a change. You need to decide, and don't put it off. And if we can help you make that change in any way, please make it known while we stand and sing for your encouragement.